Asituno bante paniyang parika pitang anukampang upadaya patigan hatu mutemang adivasituno bante pale parika pitang anukampang upadaya patigan hatu mutemang adivasituno bante bojanang parika pitang anukampang upadaya patigan hatu mutemang. Now we are chanting the puja aspiration based on our understanding of the significance of all these puja offerings. Significance of offering of light. May this offering of light to the Buddha brings forth the causes and conditions to illuminate our mind and help arise the needed clarity and understanding to dispel all darkness or ignorance therein. Significance of offering of clear water. May this offering of pure, clear, cool water lead us to the pure, clear Dhamma that cools and doses off all fires of all defilements within our mind. Significance of offering of incense. May our morality, virtue, and understanding shine forth far and wide, just like the fragrance of this incense which we are offering to the Blessed One, who is perfect in wisdom and virtue. Significance of offering of fruits. May this offering of fruits remind us of the Dana Parami of generosity and the fruit of our karma, so that we were diligently and on with heedfulness to attain the path and fruition as soon as possible. Significance of offering of flowers. May this constant offering of flowers to the Blessed One strengthen our faith and constantly remind us of the impermanence of this body, so that we will diligently and sincerely strive on to cultivate sila, samadhi, and panya, leading to ultimate liberation, the bond-free nibbana. Making of overall aspiration. By the power of all these merits, born of these offerings, may our spiritual faculties of Saddha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya be further strengthened until they become balas or powers, sharing and transferring merits to all beings. May these merits be shared and transferred to all beings without exception, especially to those who have the condition and affinity to receive them. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, let us pay respect. Triple gem. Padang pujemi. Damang pujemi. Sanghang pujemi. Okay, you can be seated. Just relax body and mind. Is there anything else that they want to offer? Just now they just brought in something I saw. Yeah, you can offer. Yeah, you're going to get a plate or a bowl, huh? Then scoop some and offer. Yeah. Okay, tonight we will have a short meditation. Eh? Then we will begin chapter 1 on the Buddha. The first chapter is very interesting. The title is The Buddha, From Birth Until His Renunciation. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Good. Li Hun just make some offering. Chui also just arrived. Very good. So we will off the light so that you can have about 25 minutes of meditation. I will ring the bell after 25 minutes. Just relax body and mind. And the four support for awareness-based meditation. Always remember, first support is relax into every mind state that arises. Relaxation is very important. Of course, the body and mind also is very important, so you have to relax the body and mind so that it can harmonize to do the meditation together. Then make sure you have a stable posture, backbone is straight, then just relax body and mind, then silence your mind if you already have the spiritual faculty and meditate. For those who still need to train their mind, you can use whatever understanding or skillful means, followed by whatever object of meditation that you may be familiar with to stabilize that sati or mindfulness that you have developed. For most people who are new, if the mental hindrance are still there, then you may need to do the mind sweeping method combined with loving kindness or metta to decondition your heedless thinking so that this mind can become more peaceful, more quiet, more silent and more still. So this training is very useful. Then after you have developed the ability to calm yourself down and make yourself peaceful, you need to stabilize this mindfulness that you have developed. You can use any method or technique or skillful means that you are familiar with. It can be anapanasati or rising falling or any of the chanting or mantra. Like in Thailand, they use Buddha, Buddha, Buddha. Then Mahayana, they use the Buddha's name or the Bodhisattva's name. Then you can also chant the nine great virtues of the Buddha if it can give you faith and make you peaceful and calm. Or you can meditate on the four Brahma Vihara state, which is Metta, Karuna. Then you have your the last one is Upekha. Then you have this sympathetic joy. Sympathetic joy. So these four Brahma Vihara are also useful mind state that can make you very calm, very peaceful, to develop the metta, to develop the compassion. Then the mudita, which is sympathetic joy, followed by finally upekha. Okay, Queenie, you can make the offering. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, now I'll let you meditate. you still want to meditate, you can continue. Put yourself in now, slowly, mindfully, come out of meditation. Try to maintain whatever inner peace, inner calmness, and inner mindfulness that you have developed for as long as you can. Then these are the trained mind state that you have to use to cultivate your daily mindfulness, to use it to live life, to develop the actual awakening or understanding of the universal characteristics that the Buddha talked about, which is impermanent, leading to suffering state and non-self or empty nature. Okay, now we will turn to page 6 of the chanting book. We will do the invocation to the devas. Invocation to the devas. In this universe, in their entirety, let the deities or devas come here. Let them hear the good doctrine of the King of Sages, which gives heaven and release Nibbana. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. Now I will chant the Pali. Samantha Chakawalesu Atra Gacchantu Devata Saddhamma Muni Rajasa Sunantu Sakamokadang Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Namo Atassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa Namo Atassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa Namo Atassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa Ittipeso Bhagava Arahang Samma Sambuddho Vijacarana Sampanno Sugato Lokavido Anuttaro Purisa Dhamma Sarati Satta Deva Manusanam Buddho Bhagavati Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Sanditiko Akaliko Ehipaseko Opanayiko Pachatang Veditabho Inohiti Supatipanno Bhagavato Savakasangho Ujjupatipanno Bhagavato Savakasangho Nyayapatipanno Bhagavato Savakasangho Samichipatipanno Bhagavato Savakasangho Yadidang Chattari Purisa Yogani Atta Purisa Pugala Esa Bhagavato Savakasangho Ahuneyo Pahuneyo Dakeneyo Anjalikaraneyo Anuttarang Punyaketang Lokasati Sadhu Sadhu Sadhu. Okay, let us pay respect to Pajang. Jamie. Sanghang Pujami. Okay. You can be seated. Then we will continue with our Dhamma discussion on the Buddha and his teaching. Today we will start officially with chapter 1. Eh? Chapter 1 is quite interesting. Eh? It's about the Buddha from birth to renunciation. Eh? Turn to page 1. So they have this salutation, eh? The one you chant just now, Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. These are the Pali version of our salutation to the Buddha. The translated English version is homage to him, eh? Or to thee, the blessed one, the worthy one, and the fully enlightened one. Eh? Sometimes they use the word the exalted one. The exalted one is also blessed one. So the Buddha is so unique a being. He is not only enlightened, he is fully enlightened. That's why he is blessed with great wisdom and virtue. You can say he is the wisest and the most virtuous living being ever to be born at that time. So that's why we pay homage to him, the Buddha, who is the blessed one. Then worthy one is because he is fully enlightened. Yeah. Also an arahant that has no more ignorance and delusion. So he is worthy of respect, offering, gift and hospitality. And the field of merit is immeasurable. Mm. Then of course, finally, the fully enlightened one. Eh? So these are the three of the nine great virtues. The blessed one, the worthy one, and the fully enlightened one. Mm. Then we shall now commence chapter 1. Eh? The Buddha, from birth to renunciation. A unique being, an extraordinary being, or man, arises in this world for the benefits of the many, for the happiness of the many, out of compassion for the world, for the good, for the benefit and happiness of gods and men. Who is this unique being? It is the Tathagata. Tathagata is another name for the Buddha, fully enlightened. So it is the Tathagata, the blessed one, the fully enlightened one. Mm-hmm. So birth. He was born in the year 623 BC. On the full moon day of May, in the year 623 BC, there was born in Lumbini Park. This one is in India, at Kapilavatu, on the Indian border of the present Nepal country. A noble prince who was destined to be the greatest religious teacher in the world, was born. His father was King Suddhodana of the aristocratic Sakya clan, and his mother was Queen Mahamaya. As the beloved mother died 7 days after his birth, Mahapajapati Gotami, her younger sister, who was also married to the king, adopted the child and entrusting her own son, Nanda, to the care of the nurse. Means her own child, she entrusted to a nurse. Then she raised Sakyamuni, Buddha. Great were the rejoicing of the people over the birth of this illustrious prince, an ascetic of high spiritual attainment named Asita, also known as Kaladevala, was particularly pleased to hear this happy news, and being a tutor of the king, visited the palace to see the royal baby. The king, who felt honored by his unexpected visit, carried the child up to him in order to make the child pay him due reverence or respect. But to the surprise of all, the child's leg turned and rested on the mat. On the matted locks of the ascetic. Instantly, the ascetic rose from his seat and, foreseeing with his supernormal vision the child's future greatness, saluted him with clasped hands. The father, the royal father, did likewise. The great ascetic smiled at first and then was sad. Questioned regarding his mixed feeling or mingled feelings, he answered that he smiled because the prince would eventually become a Buddha, an enlightened one, and he was sad because he would not be able to benefit from the superior wisdom of the enlightened one, owing to his prior death and rebirth in the formless realm, the Arupa Loka. Okay, we will stop here. Huh? Then there are some notes, printed small letter. We will go through this note. The sight of note one, on page two. The site of Kapilavatthu has been identified with Buyola, or pronounced as Buya, in the Basti district, 3 miles from Bengal and northwest rail station of Babuan. I think this must be the present name of this place. And note two is the genealogical table. Then note 3, Gautama is the family name, so you must know. That's why if you are not familiar with the life history of the Buddha, when people mention about Siddhartha Gautama, you may not know that this is the being that was born and he became the future Buddha, Sakyamuni Buddha. So his original name was Siddhartha. Siddhartha is a Pali name, means wish fulfilled. Gautama is the family name. So this one will make you understand. Tradition holds that the son of King Okaka of the Mahasamatha line or lineage were exiled through the plotting of their stepmother. This prince, in the course of their wandering, arrived at the foothill of the Himalayas. Here they met the sage Kapila, on whose advice and after whom they founded the city of Kapilavatthu, the site of Kapila. King Okaka, hearing of the enterprise of the princess, exclaimed, Sakyavatthu, Bo Raja Kumara. Capable indeed are the noble prince. Hence the race of the kingdom they originated were known by the name of Sakya. That's why they were very famous, the Sakya family. The Sakya kingdom was situated in South Nepal and extended over much of modern, Ud province. Thank you. Then turn to the next page. Again, the note. C. Warren, means this person who wrote this book, Buddhism in Translation, page 49, and the Jataka commentary on this Asita, advice his nephew Nalaka renounced the world, and when the prince, as expected, attained Buddhahood, he heard his teaching and became an Arahant. So this part is just another commentary, another part of the whole story. Maybe some of you may not know who this Asita is. Asita, during the time of the Buddha, is a very respected and supposed to be one of the very wise ones. they got this psychic ability where they got this jhanas that enable them to see a lot of things. And he is also the tutor to the king. He actually taught the king. So the king was very happy when he saw him come without notice. Then, as usual, normally the king also pay respect to him. Then he expect the newborn baby to also pay respect to him. But then, because of Siddhartha Gautama's very unique birth, somehow the baby's like doesn't want to pay respect. Then what happened was, this Asita, the wise one, he could see that this baby will grow up to be a great being. That's why he straight away come out from his seat and pay his respect before the palm. And the father did so also. Then he was happy initially, then later on not so happy. So as explained in the Jataka story, they say this wise person, he was happy because a very, very famous and wise being has been born. Then when he checked before this prince, the newborn prince, become enlightened, he himself would have passed away. That's why he was not too happy in that sense. And he also know where he will take birth, the Arupa Loka. So you look at note 2, Arupa Loka are this formless or immaterial plane of existence, where those who have developed the Arupa Jhana or formless Jhana, which they call special absorption and ecstasy type of concentration, they call it the formless Jhana, they are born there. There are 4 realms of existence in the formless realm, the formless jhana. The first realm is called the realm of infinite space. Then the second realm is the realm of infinite consciousness. Then the third realm is the realm of nothingness. Of course, the fourth one is the highest, which is the realm of neither perception nor non-perception. The mind are so still, so quiet. It like doesn't exist. That's why it's like nothing inside there. Then it's like you neither perceive or don't perceive. Neither perception or non-perception. It's a very still, subtle, quiet state of mind. And these are still within samsara existence, the 31 plane of existence. The top 4 rhyme of existence. Okay, then we turn to the next page. The naming ceremony. On the 5th day after the prince's birth, he was named Siddhartha, which means wish fulfilled. So this one is a very, very good name. If you can have this name, means your parami must be very special. Whatever wish you have, your pure wish, it will be fulfilled because of the great parami. Then his family name was Gautama, like what I explained just now. So they call him Siddhartha Gautama. But after he became fully enlightened, he was called Sakyamuni Buddha, because he was the Buddha of the Sakya family. You understand now? Muni is the fully enlightened being, great being. Sakya is the family, they call it the family name. The Sakya clan. They came from the Sakya family. So, means the Buddha of the Sakya clan. In accordance with ancient Indian custom, learned Brahmins were invited to the palace for the naming ceremony. Among them, there were 3. Among them were 8 distinguished people examining the characteristic mark of the child. Seven of them raised two fingers each, indicative of two possibilities, and said that he would either become a universal monarch or a Buddha. But the youngest, Kondanya, who excelled others in wisdom, noticing the hair on the forehead, turned to the right, raised only one finger, and convincingly declared that the prince would definitely retire from the world and become a Buddha. So this was the recorded story. Then there was one part that was not mentioned here. It seems, did they talk about the birth? Wait, I checked for the back. I also didn't really read through. I believe it must be there. His birth is quite unique, or no? Never mind, later on we check whether it's there or not. Anyway, based on what I can recall, I used to hear this story from Ravan Suwarno. he is a very interesting storyteller. It simply said the mother gave birth to Siddhartha Gautama while standing between two sala trees, and he gave birth to the prince. And the moment he was born, he walked seven steps, with the finger against the sky. Then every step his leg come out, one lotus appear. He walked seven steps with seven lotus. That was also recorded, but I don't know whether it's mentioned here or not. Later on we see. Then after the naming ceremony, we have this plowing festival. This is very important. This is the analogy that I used to give. You see, after he left the palace, you remember, he renounced the world in search of truth, because he saw the four signs. And what are the four signs he saw that make him decide to renounce the world and search for truth? What are the four signs? What are the four signs? Old age, sickness, and death, followed by the last one, a holy person, or a samana, a peaceful, calm, spiritual practitioner, cultivator, with a very serene composure. So when he saw the first three signs, when he was told that every living being, no matter who you are, you can be even the prince or the king or the most powerful person in the state or in your country, but you cannot escape these three reality of birth and death. Means you will go through life to experience getting old, getting sick, and one day die. So birth leading to old age, sickness, and death. Then when he was told that each and every one of us, if we live long enough, we will become like that, then he knew he has a problem. That's why he wants to seek an answer to old age, sickness, and death. Then he saw the samana, who is a spiritual practitioner, who is very calm, very peaceful. And in the time of the Buddha, is a very, very virtuous act or duty to go forth to become a monk, or to seek the truth, to meditate, so that you can benefit the world, be a blessing to all of humanity. So the Buddha decided to renounce the world is because of that, because to him, he saw everything that the Father has given him for the last 29 years since he was born. He has all the four palaces of the four seasons, it seems. Then everything that was given to him is, he cannot see this three sign or four sign. There is no old people serving him. There is no sick people around him. and he cannot even come across any dead person. So he was brought up in a very different environment because of the prediction. So the prediction by 7 of the wise men say he can be either a monarch or a universal teacher, the Buddha, except for the last one, Kondanya. So the king has this ambition of wanting the son to be a monarch. That's why he said, if your son see the four signs, he will renounce. And that one was given by, I think, Asita. And the king was very worried because of that. So that's why he kept the four signs away from him. But somehow, because it is his like karmic inheritance and spiritual inheritance, it's like he is destined via the vow to become a Sammasambuddha. That's why even the father did everything to hide the four signs from him. He finally saw them when he decided to leave the palace with his assistant, I think, somebody who looked after him. So when he saw all this sign, he asked his assistant, how come this person is like that, so old, so haggard? He cannot understand. Then the assistant answered him. He said, he's a very old person. And the Buddha cannot understand. What do you mean by old? He said, each and every one of us, if we live long enough, you will also become very old and become like this person, very haggard, very sickly. And all of your organs are failing you. Then after that, he saw a sick person who was very badly diseased and suffering. Then he saw a dead person. So all this like suddenly triggered the search, the inquiry deep inside him. He realized that everything he has been given by the Father has got no more meaning. All of the good life, the one beautiful materialistic life, has got no more meaning. Because finally, he said, this body of mine still has to grow old like this person, so haggard, so like unsightly and miserable, that it can become diseased and sick and have this suffering and misery. Then finally it will die. That's why all this so-called flirting happiness has got no meaning. We are ultimately this reality of having to go through and confront all his sickness and death is something that he has got no answer to. That's why he decides to renounce the world, to seek an answer to life. And finally he realizes it at the age of 35 underneath the Bodhi tree. And you all know that how he realized the truth. How did he realize the truth and overcome his problem, the thing that he was seeking? How did it awaken him and make him the way he is? Can you remember? What happened after the enlightenment underneath the Bodhi tree? What did the Buddha realize? This is very important. You have to tie in with the four signs. Otherwise, you cannot understand his teaching. What did he realize? Okay, I will use the whiteboard. Underneath the Bodhi tree, after he became enlightened, what was the thing that the Buddha realized? You call it what? The Buddha become what? Enlightened, fully enlightened. Enlightened to what? That's why a lot of people don't understand. Karma is one of the understanding, but the main understanding is what? Of course, it's the Four Noble Truths. But the key understanding, you see, the Four Noble Truths is very beautiful. It's like the secret of life, both mundane and supramundane. But what is he seeking? No, he's not seeking happiness. He is seeking an answer to old age, sickness, and death. You remember? The four signs. Especially the first three, yeah? Old age, sickness, and death. Of course, the fourth one is the Samana, huh? That one is to renounce the world and go for, means become a monk. Yeah. So these three, first three signs, which he realized is a universal problem to all of living beings or mankind or humanity. So how can you overcome this? So this is what the enlightenment is all about. Of course, you say he realized the law of karma, which is one of the understanding that he developed. Then the dependent origination, Paticca Samuppada. Then the Dhamma, the universal truth. But the key thing to his enlightenment is he realized the understanding and wisdom that this always sickness and death is not his problem. Because this pertains to the physical body. That is the enlightenment. That this form and mind is not me. Understand that? That's why in the first noble truth, when he proclaimed that truth, the final summary is very important. He said, in short, it is due to our self-delusion that grasps and cling and hold on to this physical body and mind, the five aggregate of form and mind, thinking that it is real, belong to us. And this is me. This is I. Therefore, it can own all these things. All this can be mine. You can develop the selfishness, the possessiveness, the craving, the desire, the covetousness, and all of the emotion that come with it, including the fear, worry, anxiety, doubt, and delusion. So this is fundamental. When he realized the enlightenment and awakened to the truth that this form and mind doesn't belong to him, and this is condition arising, dependent originating, having the universal characteristics of impermanent, leading to suffering when you deludedly grasp and cling and hold, and because it's impermanent, it's not a permanent unchanging entity that you can claim or hold on to, cling on to and say, this is me, this is I, therefore all this can be mine. There is no such thing. And because of that, he awakened to the truth that he realized always sickness and death pertain to the physical form, the physical body, which is element, go the way of nature, impermanent, not real, not what you think you are. Yeah. Because the physical body without the consciousness cannot be you. It goes the way of nature. And it's a compounded thing, condition arising. Without the consciousness, without the life force, this physical body is nothing. But when the three come together, then it animates into a human being, a living being. And this is the greatest secret that he realized. That's why he immediately free. That's why in his teaching, he teach you to have the five daily contemplation. What are the five daily contemplation? The first three is what? This body of mind. This body of mind is of the nature to grow old, to get sick, and finally die. For it goes the way of nature. It pertains to the form. That's why the Buddha asks you to reflect every day. The five daily contemplation. You contemplate and reflect so that you are not deluded. Because this form and mind is not you. And this physical body is of the nature to grow old, get sick, and die. And this one is not you. So when you confront this reality of getting old, getting sick, and die, there is no fear, no delusion. Because you realize this one pertains to the body. That's why the Buddha said, when the body is sick, don't allow your mind also to be sick. Then, who die? No one die. Who get old? Who get sick? Nobody inside there. The Buddha, even when his own, as a bodhisattva, when his own children or loved one pass away, he said, whatever that is of the nature to arise is of the nature to cease. That's why they are conditioned arising, dependent originating. Then, when death occurs, he said, whatever that has arise or been born has already come to pass or died. So no amount of sorrow and lamentation will bring back the dead. So this is the full understanding. That's how his mind liberates. Old age, sickness, and death is no more a problem for him. That's why he become enlightened. And because of his perfection from the past, he became fully enlightened. Because the spiritual nature, which he has cultivated over the eons and eons of perfection, the 10 perfection that develops into the spiritual nature, Sambhogayakaya, that one connected, he inherits straight away. That's why when the functional body that performed the function of Sakyamuni Buddha combined with the spiritual understanding or spiritual nature, these two combine and animate it into Dhammakaya, the third body, the Dhamma body of the Buddha. That's why he becomes the living Sammasambuddha that speaks the Dhamma. That's how the third body of the Buddha, Dhammakaya, come to be. First is the Nimanakaya, the functional body that performed the function of Sakyamuni when he came. Then later on, he inherited the spiritual body, which is the perfection of wisdom and virtue that he has cultivated for eons and eons and eons. That's how these two animate him into a Sammasambuddha to give rise to the third transformation body, which they call it the Dhamma body, Dhammakaya, that speaks the Dhamma. So this is the key understanding that you have to develop. It's not just for number two, repeating what the books say and what people tell you, or just law, karma, paticca samuppada, dependent origination, or then you talk about maybe the four foundations of mindfulness. But you cannot see the gist of the teaching, the clear basic understanding that he awakened to, that make him free from all his sickness and death. And this one is seldom explained by people or even Buddhists. Seldom. They only quote all this, but they didn't understand what the enlightenment is all about. And a lot of people who don't understand, they thought enlightenment means see light. We have the word light. So when they go into concentration, jhana, they see nimitta, they see light. You say enlightened already, got light already. So this word enlightenment is a bit misleading. It shows that you have clarity, and as you awaken to the delusion, means there is light. That's why you can have that clarity to see clearly and awaken. So this one is not necessary. There must be light in the meditation. The mind must be silent, still, just aware, then it will awaken to. There must be clarity, just aware. That is your true mind. And you have to use the true mind to meditate. You cannot use the conditioned arising mind, thinking mind, or mundane mind to meditate. Because that one is within the field of thought. You cannot realize the state that is beyond thought, beyond mind. Okay? So this part, can understand? Okay, any question up to this point? So now you understand how the history of the Buddha come about and how he renounced the world and go forth to search How many of you, since birth until now, you recollect? You have seen a lot of old people, sick people, and also witness death. Did it trigger off any urgency in you or not? To search? Did it, like, somehow indicate to you that this is going to be a problem? Have it ever occurred to you? Then does it make you search? You never. And most of them only do what? They try to develop love and compassion, like the hospice and all that. They go and help all these people. They say, pitiful, people suffering. Do you know what you are doing? You are not solving the problem. You are trying to cultivate so-called goodness and all those things. Love and compassion. It's nothing wrong. Nothing wrong. But the full understanding behind all this is very important, so that you can play your role well. So that when you meet them, you have to explain to them this reality, that this one pertains to the physical body, is not you. Your mind can detach, you can free, you can liberate, and you can still be peaceful within, not affected by the form which goes the way of nature. Then the fourth contemplation, of course we know. What is the fourth daily contemplation? What is the fourth one? You have to reflect every day, it's in the chanting book. Very good. Like Paramahansa said, all of your loved one, or your prized possession, or whatever you hold on to dearly, including your physical body and your form and mind, they are condition arising, dependent originating. When condition is there, it's like they belong to you. But when condition cease to be, they separate from you. So separation from loved one and things that you hold on to dearly or your prized possession, this is a reality in life, understand? When condition cease to be, this thing will happen. So when separation occurs, it can occur in many ways, like we went through earlier on. Loved one and all things. Separation can occur during death. And death can happen in many ways, not necessarily natural death. Disease and sickness. Then, tsunami, nature's disaster, accident, through injury and other things, can lead to death. Then sometimes, psychological sickness, depression, all things can also lead to death, suicidal. Then separation can also occur in the form of relationship, divorce, or love relationship. Those who are not married, they decide to separate, or you get yourself jilted. Then your possession, like your wealth, your property, even your assets, your maybe portfolio, asset or shares and all these things. During a crisis, when you make a wrong decision, a wrong call, even your business, it may lead to complete separation, wipe off. Sometimes you end up owing the bank more because your asset is short, not enough to pay for what you have lost. So all these are the reality. So when separation occurs, if you do not understand this reality that the form and mind don't belong to you, when the breath stops, your identity erased, you cannot own anything. Even before your breath stops, when conditions cease to be, you also lose them. You also cannot own them. Then like what we have gone through. You come without anything. Means during birth. When you are born into this world, you didn't bring along anything. When you leave this world through death, you also cannot take along anything. So the Mandarin got a very good saying, Sen putai lai, si putai chi. You can understand? When you are born into this world, you don't bring anything. When you die, you also don't take along anything. 生不带来，死不带去. Then there is another wise saying, which I like. When I was very young, I saw this swordsman story film of show. Then when I heard the monk chanting this to one person who was trapped down there, he said, he said it in a very, very poetic and very nice way. He said, you come empty, you go empty. So in Mandarin is Lai Ye Kong, means when you are born into this world, when you come, you didn't bring along anything. Lai Ye Kong. Qi Ye Kong means when you die, you also cannot bring along anything. Yeah. Then he said, in between, what do you do? Since birth and death, you don't bring along anything, you don't take along anything. Then in between, what do you do? 那么施主啊, 何必苦苦啊, 为空流泪? Why did you shed all the tears, the sorrow, the lamentation, the anger, the fear, the phobia, and all this miserable mind state in between? Over what? Emptiness. You may think you accumulate wealth, yeah? Work very hard, sloth very hard, or by all means crooked, deceiving and cheating and all those things. You go and accumulate, amass all these things. Finally, it's still empty. You cannot take along anything. If you don't understand all this, you don't know how to make use of all this, then if you go against nature's law to acquire all this, the nature's law will hit back. It has its own repercussion, friction. That's why without the Dhamma, you don't understand life. And when you don't understand life, you don't know how to live life, then suffering will be the result, misery. Just like the Mandarin saying, Lai Ye Kong, Qi Ye Kong. Namo Si Zu, He Bi, Ku Ku, in between, grief over emptiness, Wei Kong, Liu Lei. Is it worth it? Never worth it. So you, when you see that everything is just empty, not what you think, then you should do whatever that is appropriate in accordance with this Dhamma understanding or nature's law, so that you will develop the appropriate understanding and wisdom to take care of your karma, so that every life when you come, choose to come or have to come, your form and mind is beautiful because you are born of your karma, heir to your karma, conditioned and supported by your karma. And you are what you are because of your karma. So that is the fifth daily contemplation. So when you realize karma plays such a great role in your life, what must you do? You must take care of karma. That's why you must have this teaching. Then you are beautiful. Yeah. And this is what the whole teaching is all about, all summarized under the enlightenment of the Buddha. You must first go back to the original basic reason why he decided to go forth and seek the truth, renounce the world. So these four signs are very important. Okay? Now you can see. Yeah? Then the realization is the form and mind is not real. It is conditioned arising, dependent, originating, karmically conditioned out for you to come to this world. A vehicle and a tool for you to come, to use, to live life, to experience life, to experience all of the beauty and wonders of life, for you to use to cultivate. And some, through delusion, you come because of karma, so that you pay back your karmic debt. Then in between, you create more karmic debt. And this debt can never be finished paying. You understand? That's why life become miserable. Life become like full of suffering, misery. Then the whole mass of suffering, which is sorrow, lamentation, fear, worry, anxiety, depression, misery, going through all its sickness and death without understanding. When you experience always sickness and death without the Dhamma, without the understanding, there can be a lot of suffering, very traumatic, a lot of fear, a lot of worry, a lot of anxiety, a lot of misery that come with it, the pain, the uncomfortableness, the fear, the projected thought and honesty, the worry, the anxiety, the restlessness of mind, leading to all the negative tendency, depressive tendency and all those things. Then the worst one is ideology. The thought create a lot of idea for you, ideology, which is never the truth, which can never free you. Mm-hmm. Okay? So any question or anybody want to add anything? This part I think is very useful, and this is what I earlier on shared with you all. You may think this book is a very simple book, just the Buddha and his teaching, kindergarten for beginner, you know, something. But when you have the understanding, you can share it differently, and it become very, very profound and very beautiful. You know. Anybody want to add anything or share anything or ask any question? You can put up your hand. Because this is a Dhamma discussion. Make use of it. And I want you all to learn how to express yourself. Make use of this session to express yourself. But this is not really very deep Dhamma. But based on your understanding, you can actually express it out. And when you can express it out, like last Tuesday, remember Mimi shared with you all towards the end? She expressed it out, which was really good. Then she write it down. When you can write it down, means you have some form of stability of understanding. Otherwise, you cannot write it down. Otherwise, it's just theory, like all. Then you are not systematic. Then you cannot link. That's why she did for many years. She tried to draw all the links together. She used to tell me. Then she tried to understand them. Then later on, without the notes, she will reflect, contemplate, and develop the understanding. That's how you can progress if you do that. Otherwise, it's not easy. These are what the Buddha calls second turning wisdom. Reflect, contemplate, stabilize the understanding, then assimilate them in. Then after that, with the understanding, you meditate. When you meditate with that understanding, you progress very fast. Okay? Anybody? Any question or want to share anything? You raise your hand. Nobody? Oh, then we go on. Okay, we go on. Plowing festival. Plowing festival. We are on page 4. A very remarkable incident took place in his childhood. It was an unprecedented spiritual experience, which later, during his search for truth, served as key to his enlightenment. This was the one that I used to share with you all. I read on, then you understand. To promote agriculture, the king arranged for a plowing festival. It was indeed a festival occasion for all, as both nobles and commoners, decked in their best attire, participated in the ceremony. On the appointed day, the king, accompanied by his courtiers, how's the pronunciation? Courtiers or what? How do you pronounce this one? Courtiers, went to the field, taking with him the young prince together with the nurses, those who care for the prince, placing the child on a screen and canopy couch under the cool shade of a solitary rose apple tree to be watched by the nurse. So this one, rose apple tree, you remember Newton? He sat underneath the tree. The apple dropped on his head. Then, what did he realize? He realized gravity. He was so curious. How come the apple fall down, never fall up? For us, it's like we take for granted, isn't it? Things will drop from above. But Newton is very different. He was very curious. How come the apple dropped on his head? Then through his inquiry, investigation, he realized there is gravity. That's how he became very famous. Newtonian mechanics came about. So all this mass, acceleration, giving rise to weight and all those things come about. The king participated in the plowing festival. When the festival was at its height of gaiety, the nurse too stole away from the prince's presence to catch a glimpse of the wonderful spectacle. Means they were busy watching the ceremony, they forgot about the prince. In striking contrast to the mirth and merriness moment of the festival, it was all calm and quiet under the rose apple tree. All the conditions were conducive for quiet meditation to be there. The pensive child, young in years but old in wisdom, sat cross-legged, so young he know how to sit cross-legged, and seized the opportunity to commence that all-important practice of intent. They use the word concentration on the breath. Actually, it's mindfulness of the in and out breath, not concentration, on exhalation and inhalation, which gained for him then and there that one-pointedness of mind known as samadhi. Actually, samadhi is not one-pointedness of mind. One-pointedness of mind is concentration. Samadhi is the collected and unwavering mind. It's not necessary one-pointedness. It's just collected and unwavering. It means the silent mind, still mind. And he thus developed the first jhana. The child's nurse, who had abandoned their precious charge to enjoy themselves at the festival, suddenly realized their duty, hastened to the child, and were amazed to see him sitting cross-legged. Why they use the word plunge, like fall down like that? Actually, the word shouldn't be there. Cross-legged in deep meditation. The king, hearing of it, hurried to the spot and seeing the child in meditative posture, salute him again, saying, "This dear child, this is my second respect or obeisance." So, this particular part of the Jataka story, there are more things to it. You all have heard me explain before in that last time. How many of you can recall? How did the Buddha to be later on underneath the Bodhi tree decided to change his meditation back to what he experienced at this age? That's how he break through. And do you know how or not? Who can recall? You can come out and try to explain. When you understand, all these are interlinked, interconnected. Okay, maybe I give you a hint. When he starts to renounce the world, what did he do? He learned under who? Chui, use the mic. He became an ascetic, correct? Use the mic. Nothing more to say. Okay. He learned under who? Alara and Udaka. And what did he learn? What did those two teachers taught him? All the jhana. Alara teach him until the seventh jhana, the formless jhana, the second last highest. Then Udaka. The other way around, I think. Udaka teach him until the seventh. And then the last one is Alara. Taught him until the eighth jhana, the highest of the 31 plane of existence. And they even invited him over to be his peer, to teach. He said, "You can share the same seat with us and teach. You are as good as us." Actually, according to the commentaries, he was able to develop those seven and eight jhana until they are more stable than what that his teacher can do. But then he didn't accept their offer or invitation. Do you know why? Yeah? Do you know why? He was not happy with those mind state that he has developed. Despite all the fantastic jhana, the fantastic mind state, the formless jhana and other things, he was so peaceful, so still, like completely without suffering. The energy was so strong, one-pointedness and all those things. He can even reach the highest formless jhana of neither perception nor non-perception. Then he reached the infinite space jhana, formless jhana. Then infinite consciousness. The consciousness is like infinite. Space is like infinite. That is the mind state, so still. Then rhyme or nothingness, like nothing exists. Then the mind hardly arises, neither perception nor thought process. And yet he said, all this stillness, tranquility, doesn't solve his problem. What was his problem? Yeah, finally he realized, even like his teacher, will still die, and I said, always sickness and death is something he cannot stop or prevent. But he still thinks the body belongs to him. But their teacher got this idea. Alara and Udaka, you know what was their firm aspiration? Even that wise person, Asita, just now mentioned that he will die before Siddhartha Gautama become enlightened. And he will take birth where? Also in the form of life. But during the time, the Hindu practice were all jhana, energy field. And all of them can reach the maximum of the eight jhana. So when they hit the seven and the eight, because they know after they die, they live very long up there. So to them, they think, they believe, not think, they believe strongly that this is the state they are looking for. This is the eternal life, timeless. Means after that, you don't die anymore. Understand? So they believe that is the way to overcome old age, sickness and death. But you take birth in the formless realm. No more physical body. Understand? Mind alone. And that mind exists for so long. So many aeons and aeons and aeons. But Sakyamuni Buddha, because of his past cultivation, his wisdom and his understanding, he realized this is not true. Because if you have the understanding and the wisdom, he realized always sickness and death can still be understood and overcome without having to die first and take birth there. Understand? He also knew those who take birth there finally will fall. But as long as there is birth, there is always sickness and death. You may live very long. That's why he knew this is not the answer. And he went through all sorts of practice, ascetic practice. You know what is ascetic practice? Self-mortification. He didn't eat. He endured. That's why he became very skinny, you remember? We went to Thailand, we saw this image. Yeah? He actually became like very weak. Then what happened? He go back and eat. Remember? Then the five ascetic left him. You remember? Because he go back and eat. He realized when he was young, at the plowing festival, he was fat. He got food. He was healthy, body and mind. Then he realized that type of meditation is not one-pointedness. Not going into all those jhana and other things. He realized that time he only entered the first jhana. First jhana means what? Yeah? First jhana means what? There are five jhanic factors. First jhana means all the five jhanic factors are there. Yeah? Five jhanic factors. Yeah. And this one, what are they? First one is what? Huh? Vitaka. Cohesion. Huh? Cohesion. Huh? Cohesion. Vitaka. Vichara. Then? No. Piti. Sukha. And? Ekagata. This is one pointedness. This is one pointedness of mind. Of mind. And what is vitaka? What is it? Applied thought. Means you apply your thought. Like you know, understand not? Or focus. You apply your thought there. You fix it there. Like the nimitta or the 40 meditation object. You just hold on to that object. Apply your thought there. Like earth element, earth element, earth element. You apply your thought there. Water element, heat element. Then fire, light, and all those things. Then you focus. So you apply your thought. So this is applied thought. Applied thought. That's why this is thought based. Then the second one is what? This is sustained thought, vichara. After you apply, you fix it, you sustain it, you keep on holding on to it. So this one is called sustained thought. So when you do that, what happens? There is no more thinking, is there? Because you keep on applying the same thought, then you sustain it until it cannot think. Then what happens? When you don't think, your mind becomes peaceful. Understand? That's how you experience piti, spiritual joy, spiritual calmness. Then when this piti becomes more intense, if you don't know how to relax, this piti can become sukha. And this sukha is a very blissful state, really, really blissful. Blissful until you got this tingling sensation. Like, it's so joyful, how you describe it? It's so blissful. It's worse than the ecstasy pill, I tell you. Although I haven't taken ecstasy pill. But it's really blissful one, bliss until... It's so blissful. The word really is the correct word. It's so blissful. Until inside, like, I don't know how you call it. It's not the kanchong until you talanchan. It's like very blissful inside there. Then you can feel this goose pimple and all those things come out. But it's so blissful. Until like the whole body is engulfed with this bliss. Then after that, your mind becomes so still. You can hold it to one pointedness. But the first jhana is just the first two leading to piti. Sukha. You feel it a bit. Sukha is not strong, not pronounced. Even one pointedness is not strong. Not strong. The first three jhanic factor. Very pronounced. So the first jhana still got thought. Applied thought and sustained thought is still there. That's why they call this upachara samadhi. You know what is upachara samadhi? The mind that is in samadhi before you go deep into it. They call it apana samadhi. Apana samadhi is excess concentration. you go beyond the threshold, you have deep concentration. Upacara Samadhi is assess concentration before you go into Apana. You are going into, but before you go into, that is, you are at the threshold. If you concentrate and focus, you will go in. Then when you go into Apana, your whole mind is in absorption, locked into it. The energy is very strong. No thought at all, still. Then the energy starts to push up the jhana. You experience them from the forehead, upward and outside. And all these are energy field. So the Buddha remember when he was young, he stopped at Upacara Samadhi. Means there is still clarity. It's not in Apana Samadhi. There can be reflection, contemplation. There can be stillness, but born of a free mind. Not in concentration, not a conditioned state. That's why he go back to that type of meditation. He released the one-pointedness. When you go into the second jhana, you know what happened. After the first jhana, you relinquish vitaka and vichara. No more applied thought, no more sustained thought. You stay with piti. That is second jhana. Then after that, you stay with sukha, the third jhana. Then finally, you stay with one-pointedness. That's why the fourth jhana is characterized by upeka, equanimity. This one is not born of wisdom. This one is born of one-pointedness of mind, fixing everything, killing all the thought into one point. And that type of upeka is not the real one. You understand? Yeah. That's how the Buddha break free. So when he was in this state, he's a free mind. Then with that anapanasati, that mindfulness which is so clear that he has done before, he was able to enter that stillness and silence. Then he bypassed sukha. He bypassed ekagata. He didn't go into that jhanic concentration. He just relaxed, silent, aware. Then the piti arrived, he relaxed further until it hit pasati, the silent mind. That is the true mind. That is the meditative mind. Then until the mind enters sati. Then because he has cultivated before, when he has that mind, all of a sudden it connects to the gateway. That's how he inherited everything and he recollected everything. He became fully enlightened underneath the Bodhi tree. Now you understand. That's why the plowing festival is so important that they recorded the history or the what they call the event in his life history. And this was explained by the Buddha after his enlightenment. That's how he entered the sutta. Okay, any question so far? Yes. Get the mic. Get the mic. Pass to Yin Chan. Thank you. Push it out.
Can hear.
Now can hear.
You were practicing jhana.
I didn't practice jhana.
In calmness, in concentration, and you were very young looking.
Oh, that time, yes. When I was in University Blair. I don't look old on.
No, when you were married, when you had children, you were very young. You looked
I look like an undergraduate.
So when you practice,
you won't get old.
You don't have old age. That means you have
You will have, but slower. Understand now? It doesn't mean you don't have. You age slower. You know why you age slower or not? Because what I did was not the one-pointedness that pushed the energy up. I did the continuous mindfulness. Then I went into continuous mindfulness and absorption. This one absorbs itself until it goes into apana samadhi. Apana samadhi until the heart here, the whole of this area, there is like an energy field, you know, very strong, you know, locked inside here, the whole chest here. You know, you can, this size about, got 4 inches diameter. This whole area, there is a very strong stillness energy, you know, that was so still. I went into continuous mindfulness. And like I told you, the first time I meditate, I went into that one point of this. I didn't know what that thing is. I pushed the mind out. It went into the infinite space, the formless jhana. And I was like inside there for a while. No? Then the mind withdraw and come out. So I thought maximum I must have meditated half an hour. Yeah, that was the first time I meditate. I don't know how to meditate. And I don't know what meditation is. I heard a Dhamma talk from Chief Reverend. He just said, look into your mind. He pointed to the forehead. No? And at that time, I didn't even know where the mind is. So he pointed to the forehead. I went back that night, middle of the night. I waited till my roommate sleep. First day when I was in MU, first college. I waited till he sleep. Then midnight, I remember I checked my watch. Then I woke up. I sat on the floor near to my bed. Then I just relaxed, silent. Then because I was doing anapanasati, it naturally come to me. I also don't know why I don't know how to do it. It just do. Then I remember what Chief Reverend said, look inside. So I became curious. I also look inside. And I can focus on, because I'm a science student, I can focus on a maths problem, physics problem, or chemistry problem. I can solve it on. Even in the dream, I can solve it on. So I look inside. Blank, nothing inside there. Then suddenly I saw one bright spot, no. Then I was thinking, he said, look inside. So I look inside. I saw this bright spot. So I give it a focus, no. No sound, of course, inside there. You know what happened? Suddenly my mind penetrated that spot, no. That bright spot, no. Then like this mind travel out into infinite space, no. Unending space. Like a spaceship like that go out. But you know it's a mind moving. The first time I didn't know what was that. So suddenly it starts to release. Then I came back. But I knew I was very calm, very peaceful. I never experienced that type of peace before. That's why after that I said, maybe this is meditation. And you know what happened? After I come out, I look at my watch. 4 a.m. I was there sitting for 4 hours without realizing it. It's like I was there for not more than half an hour. Then that calmness, that stillness that I experienced lasts for a few days. I was so calm and so still, and the energy was with me. But later on, I went to Brakefield, I read the book, then I met Ramananda. Then you know Ramananda also teach anapanasati. So I just do anapanasati. I just do. Well, by itself I know how to do. Do until my anapanasati was so strong that my metta was very strong that time, my metta. Yeah. Until when I was in second year, third year, this absorption, the continuous mindfulness of anapanasati, the breathing become like so clear, you know. Every breath, like take very long, you know. One in-breath, like very long, you know. Then one out-breath, also very long. But the whole of the breath, there is so much clarity, you know. Everything that happened to the breath, the awareness inside, understand, you know. And that is the real anapanasati. And this blissfulness, that's why I experienced the bliss and anxious thing. And the pity. Pity comes first, then the bliss. Then after that, you know what happened? That continuous mindfulness becomes so still and so absorbed until the whole mind completely without thought. Completely without thought. Absorbed inside there and so still. And because I was doing it so often until my heart here, there's an energy field that locked inside still. That's why I use the word like a solid steel, S-T-E-E-L now, not S-T-I-E-L. Now become S-T-E-E-L. Like a steel block of energy, so steel, you know steel, very steel one. Lightning come, cannot even go near, no. It's like ring on the peripheral, can't even come near. No. So that time I thought, gao dim already. No. Because nothing can disturb me anymore, and I was full of metta. Full of metta, the loving kindness continuously. That's why that time, after later on I went to Australia, the dog can sense the metta and all those things. Then that time I start to meet my teacher and all those things. Then when I met Ajahn Yantra, I reversed my cultivation out. That's how I came to understood the four foundation of mindfulness and the real cultivation. Because that continuous mindfulness leading to absorption was a conditioned state. All my anusaya, latent tendency, the hindrance, they were suppressed. Cannot come out. And how did I know? After I graduate, you know, I start my work. When I started work, you don't have so much time like a student. Student, you got a lot of time to meditate. After I started work, I start to develop the what they call the craving for money. Because money is very important, because the time I immediately after graduate, not long, within a year or so, I got married. I graduated in February. I married in December. So that time, my salary was not much. Then I remember I told my wife, I said, this is not enough. We have to really be very frugal. And I have to look for something else. To be more successful in life so that I can make more money. So I got this ambition of becoming a lawyer to complement my engineering degree. Then I want to do master and all. Then I saw all these things start to move. Then the craving to achieve, to become successful, to do all this, become very strong. Then I realized, how come now can move already? Last time cannot move. And I said, then inside there, got this movement already. Then I realized the analogy the Buddha talked about. When this water, if you stir it, then the sediment will come out again. But when you leave it, you don't stir it anymore, means no condition for it to arise. Again, the clear water appear, but the sediment is still there, not rooted out. From there, I knew already. I said, this must be the situation. Then I didn't really find out the solution until I met my teacher, Ajahn Yantra, when he mentioned the highest meditation. Then only I connect it to the daily mindfulness. Then I give it a try within 2 weeks when the daily mindfulness came. I release out all my absorption, my concentration energy. Then I free the mind completely. Then I realized through the daily mindfulness, the awareness, the sati, is so different. I start to see many, many things, the defilement and all those things that I never see before. That's how I straighten the view, develop the understanding. That the yoniso manasikara come, the wise attention at the moment of sense experience. Then I start to understand how it works. That's why I told you during the early day, yoniso manasikara wisdom, at the moment of sense experience, you cannot learn one. You don't have means you don't have one. It cannot be learned one. You cannot want to cut a feeling which is a suppression. You have to meditate, reflect, contemplate, stabilize the understanding, then awaken. Then when you have it, it's always there. No need to remember one. It's always there. That's how I came to know. That's how I came to share all this with you all. Then Ingby also recently, a few Thursday talk ago, she shared the same experience. She said last time she also thought this yoniso manasikara like very difficult one. No? She always heard me mentioning it. But she thought you have to learn it one. No? You have to cultivate and develop the special awakening or ability to have that one. No? Then recently, because he did the daily mindfulness, then he was able to silence his mind whenever she's alone. He said, no problem. When she's alone, not interacting, not engaging with the external, the stillness, the silent mind, which is a free mind, is very easy for her. But when she starts to interact, talk with people, and become active in life, she realized very difficult to maintain that state. Then I straight away rejoice. I said, sadhu to you. This is what meditation is. This is the beginning of true unfolding. If you can do this, your daily mindfulness will be there. And he said, yes, when she's alone. Most of the time, she's aware, mindful. Then through the contemplation, the realization and the understanding, because through the mindfulness, she saw a lot of things, the defilement and all things, then the dependent origination, condition arising, cause of phenomena, dependent origin. So she starts to develop the contemplative understanding, the five daily contemplation, like what I thought, all those things. Then recently, she realized in the midst of life, she thought she cannot do it. Because she is so mindful, she can see the defilement coming out. Like you all study the four-right effort, isn't it? Yeah? First two, of course, is right effort to abandon the unwholesome thought that has arisen. She now come to realize what? No need to do anything. Because once the yoniso manasikara is there, he realized last time he got to go and think and reflect or try to, through knowledge, memory, how to deal with it. Understand? Like think of the direct opposite wholesome thought. Think of the consequence. That one, contemplation, that is still thought-based. But the third one he did, relax, silent, and aware, then it disappeared. Then he realized these are conditioned arising state. Impermanent, leading to suffering. Non-self, empty. Then she realized, all this is sankara. Sankara anicang, sankara dukang. Then straight away, with that wisdom, she also now know that this is what we call yoniso manasikara. The moment the yoniso manasikara come out, that understanding come out, the sankara loses its power. Then it just subsides by itself. Then she realized the second right effort to prevent the arising of unwholesome thought, no need to do anything. You only need to have understanding, wisdom, born of meditation and contemplation. That's how it happened. That's why I say no need to do anything. You have means you have. You don't have means you don't have. You still have to try to cut here, cut there, let go, don't attach. You will be heading the wrong direction. I tell you, because your thought is active again. So this is the part that you have to bear in mind. Just silence everything. So, Yunchan, I answer your question. I don't look old that time. No, you can slow down, you cannot stop it. Because that time, I was still in University Malaya. I stayed in University Malaya until 1989. Until I understood the Dhamma. When I was in the university, university, a lot of green one. The environment very conducive, very beautiful. And that is the best place to meditate and to train, actually. I will go to the office early morning, 7 something, I reach there. My office starts at 8:30. I will meditate about 45 minutes to 1 hour, formal meditation. And I like to sit on my armchair and meditate. I don't sit cross-legged on the floor or what. I sit on my executive chair. I also cross-legged on the executive chair. And I lean it to the back there, but I fully aware. Then my anapanasati very strong, then my metta very strong. Then after that, when I start, office start, I will on the light, my secretary will know, then she come in. Then I will clear all my things, but I am fully aware, daily mindfulness. And I full-time cultivate during that time. That's why until 1989, I decided to come out and test. Finish already, so can come out and test already. So the whole of the cultivation became very different, because when I was there, most of the time, after office, 4:30, it's up to me what time to go back on. I got all the key to the whole office and the guard know me. Sometimes I meditate until 7:30 only I leave the office. 4:30 to 7:30 is 3 hours. And in between the daily mindfulness, this I say can be done. can be done. Yeah. And it was so beautiful during that time. The whole long meditation began. Then when I was 89, you minus 1954, 89, I was 35 years old. No? Exactly the Buddha's age when he became awakened underneath the Bodhi tree. You see, at the age of 35, I still look like an undergraduate, you know, 21 or 22 years old. No? I never get old at that time. Yeah. I still look very like a boy look, boyish look, very boyish look. And that time, I cannot get old. I don't know why at that time, because the absorption energy, the stillness was so strong. And I used to tell my wife, if I want to like maintain my health and all those things, I will have to go back to Anapanasati and do all those things again. But this for my mind that has the Dhamma cannot do that one, no. It doesn't have the craving already, one, no. It doesn't have the urge or what to do already, no. That's why last time I remember Yun Chan used to ask me, hey, Pratyu, you know so much, you should go for retreat. I also don't know how to reply her that time. She keep on saying, you must go for retreat. And I can't tell her that I don't need to go anywhere, because that time, not really. The condition was not there. So I just say, never mind, you all go. So there were a lot of things that happened during the early days. But it's meant to be, because this nature came and connect too early, ahead of time, when a lot of the teaching were not there yet. That's why you all should thank Yun Chan. He came and located me 15 years after 1989. 2004, the tsunami year, I remember December time. That was the time she invited me to come out. Then, this is what happened over the last coming to 12 years. We are 2004, we started. So, basically, the whole of the cultivation, when you understand, is not what people tell you during the early days. You can investigate yourself, you can find out yourself, you can develop the understanding yourself. Because this is what the Buddha taught. The Dhamma can be investigated on. The truth will stand up to investigation. Then truth can be realized each by themselves, only by the wise. Each for themselves, nobody else. So this one cannot lie on. You have means you have. You don't have means you don't have. Because you were awakened to it one. So, by all means, give it a try. You got nothing to lose. Understand? Have faith. Give it a try. Do it. And it can be done. We are this sasana. The condition is there. It's very beautiful. Okay? What's the time? Wow, another 6 minutes. Okay. Maybe we stop here. We stop here. Then you all can ask our Vishal. No. The fourth jhana I mentioned already. No, fourth jhana. I explained until fourth jhana. Oh, my meditation. I don't go into jhana. I go into apana samadhi. Continuous mindfulness. Absorption. No. I went beyond that. I went into apana. I went into apana, continuous, after the first jhana. Apana means you go beyond the threshold. Threshold is before you enter apana samadhi. Apana samadhi is, like they call it, the absorption samadhi, or one-pointedness, deep concentration samadhi. No more thought involved. They want all the thought killed into one point. Yeah. No more thought. It's either mindfulness, leading to piti, sukha. Then one-pointedness, leading to concentration of mind. Our continuous mindfulness becomes so strong, so still, it goes into absorption. That's why they call it absorption. The whole of the mind is absorbed into it, like no thought inside there, very strong. Yeah, one-pointedness. No, this is the early practice. No, because of the commentary. You remember Buddha Gosa? The seven stages of purification? He said, jhana is the right concentration. Samadhi is right jhana. You understand? Pass the mic.
I haven't read about Nikayas, but I've listened to one of these that talk about Nikaya, Anugara Nikaya, Majjhima Nikaya. You know that all the Nikayas are the collections of all the Buddha's words.
Yeah.
And inside there, they keep mentioning about jhana, 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 jhana. And I was wondering whether is it a translation problems or whatsoever. They kept mentioning about jhana.
It's not only translation problem. Translation problem is one of the things. But the person who gave the commentary, understand? You know what is a commentary, you know? I comment on the sutta. I comment on the Nikaya, understand?
But he did read out the so-called the...
I will give you an example later at the 6th Pitya Platform Sutta. Because you have to translate it first. Then only use the English translation as commentary. Understand? So if the translation is wrong or out, and you use that thing to comment, you will be doubly or triply out. Understand? And a lot of people at that time follow Buddha Gosa because to them, they interpret the Samadhi as the eight jhana. Understand? You're off that thing. Push it down.
Sorry. Maybe will you be able to introduce to me at least? I don't know who is Buddha Gosa.
Buddha Gosa is the one that wrote the thick book, The Seven Stages of Purification, Visuddhimagga. Burmese monk used that as the Bible. But I can explain to you very simply. You ask the question, if it's really jhana, the right concentration of samadhi, if it's really jhana, you think the Buddha don't know how to use the word samajhana. Why must he use the word samadhi? You ask yourself. Why you want to confuse people with two words? It's just like the right effort. Sama vayama, the Pali word. That is right effort. But virya, they also say effort. The five spiritual faculty. But the English translation is wrong. Virya is spiritual zeal. It's not effort. No, that one is clear comprehension. Clear comprehension. Sampajana. Sati sampajana. So the English translation is a problem. When you use this word, virya, also right effort, the four right effort, also right effort, you think it's the same.
Are you challenging all the monks?
No. Why you want to challenge? Not misinterpreted. They are just the way they are. If they believe in that, correct, Chui. People are just... Okay, then I explain to you why it's like that. Very easy. If the teaching is still the same, you will have more and more enlightened beings in there. How come since the Buddha time until now, they themselves write in the book, you hardly can find even a sotapan? You understand? If the teaching is still the correct, authentic teaching, there will be a lot of enlightened beings. And why is it nowadays, the original teaching of the Buddha, Anapanasati, become Samatha? It's not false logic. It's not there were some. During the Buddha's time, there were a lot of enlightened beings.
But this enlightenment become less and less and less. You know why? Because there was no particular transmission. The transmission was not possible. You know why? It has to go to oral transmission through chanting, where there was no word, no writing. You understand? Then when there is no word and no writing, like I pass you a message, you pass down to 10 person, what happened to that message? From the Buddha go to the top disciple, maybe they can retain from 80 to maybe 50%. That's the reason why the Mahayana say the Dhamma is not in the Tipitaka. You remember they laugh at the turtle carrying the Tipitaka, yet the turtle don't understand. Then the turtle laugh back. You think the Dhamma is inside there. They are finger pointing to the truth. The truth need to be realized. But if you have not realized, you go and write commentary, and you go and interpret, what happened? The blind leading the blind. Understand? We are not commenting whether they are right or wrong. It's nothing to be done for or not going to be right. Because the Buddha teaching is very simple. No. No, Chuy. You must understand the Dhamma that was taught by the Buddha was very simple. But it became complicated, you know how. Human being used the thought to try to understand his teaching. Then what happened? They come out with the worst thing is the method and the technique. Then later on, the teacher. And the thing that the Buddha never taught, rising, falling, become vipassana. Understand? That's how it can happen. Then the one that the Buddha taught, anapanasati, becomes samatha meditation. But it's not the method and the technique, like I said. These are very skillful means to train the mind, but you don't understand. The key thing is the five spiritual faculty. And it's not mentioned, not taught. Of course, the words are there. But they cannot understand what this thing is. They teach it as a separate topic, five spiritual faculty. Then they separate five mental hindrance. Then all the Dhamma, they separate, like never link. Noble Eightfold Path is one path factor, not eight path factor, understand not? Noble Eightfold Path is just one path, but within the Noble Eightfold Path, there are eight separate components, path factor. Very easy to go wrong, very easy to debate. The Buddha already told you. The Buddha already told you, Chui, as per the Kalama Sutta. Ayo, you never listen. You straight away. You know what he told the Kalama? No? Don't believe anything. Don't even believe the Buddha. Understand? The Kalama told the Buddha, he said, a lot of teachers come and claim theirs is the only truth. So which one shall we follow? Like what you are facing. Yeah, you are trying to give your own views and opinion. You say they are all monks. For so many hundred years, they have been teaching this same thing. How can they be wrong? Understand? That is your approach. Understand? We are not looking at all this. You know, the Buddha say the Dhamma is akaliko, timeless, beyond thought, beyond time. And it can be investigated upon. Ehi paseko. It stand up to investigate. Why don't you investigate? Why do you want to argue about the Dhamma? Right and wrong. No, you need to listen. But you need to understand. If you say no need to listen. Wait. If you say no need to listen, the Buddha don't have to come. Understand now? The Buddha come because he wants to proclaim the truth. Oh, what's the time already? Maybe we keep it to next Tuesday. We keep the thing to next Tuesday. Otherwise, we won't end. Huh? We need more time to explain it. But it is not what you think. Understand? We are not interested in right or wrong. People right, people. No, we are interested in understanding the Dhamma, the teaching. Because you don't have to believe what the Buddha say, and even what I say. You only have to put it to test. Cultivate it. Then, if you really do it correctly, the understanding will unfold. And like the Buddha said, this Dhamma is pachetang, can be experienced by the wise, each for themselves. And the characteristic of the Dhamma is all that, timeless, beyond thought, beyond time. Can you realize a state of awakening that is beyond thought, beyond time? No thought involved. If you can't, then forget about what the book says. You just have to continuously investigate, understand, and cultivate. You cannot hurry, you understand? No? You cannot keep on arguing why the monk all say this. You are not going anywhere. You continue to do that. Because you don't want to give it a try. Giving it a try means what? I find out for myself. I don't want to believe anybody. When I came, I don't follow any method and technique. My nature just bring about the understanding. Maybe you can say this nature has its past cultivation. It's more blessed, more lucky. But it also has its condition, understand or not? Then why people cannot receive is because of karmic obstruction. Because when you go and do commentary without understanding, you lead people astray. So when you come, you will be led back to that type of commentary that you used to write and teach people, understand or not? It's just like people who do that type of meditation, you go and promote it. This time you come, you will go back to those meditation first. That is the law of dependent originating, condition arising, karma. You reap what you sow. But you know to ask for forgiveness, repent, then make aspiration for causes and conditions for the right understanding. And then the path is very clear. The way is very clear. It will unfold. There is no more problem. That's why the Buddha taught all this. Adhitana, aspiration, imina punyang kamina, mameba. Follow all this, understand? Be sincere, have faith, invoke power of merits for causes and conditions to avoid all the foolish and the heedless, meet out the wise and the enlightened. And all this will unfold. But you continue to have doubt, argue, want to find all this whether right or wrong, you will be wasting time. Wasting time. So, the teaching is very simple, like the Buddha said. Avoid all evil, do good, purify the mind, then use the merits to invoke for causes and conditions for you to avoid the foolish and the heedless, meet up with the wise. Then enlightenment in the here and the now can be realized. Then you need to ask for forgiveness, repent, do it. Don't try to know, just do. Then it will unfold. Okay? So any question? Next Tuesday. Yeah? Okay, thank you so much. Yeah? Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Anyway, thank all the people who bring up the good sharing and question. Well, it's meant to be a discussion. Actually, I like the way the discussion is starting to move. Even Hui Ling, Chui, and Yu Chan. You need to prompt with the appropriate question. But what we have to avoid is argument. Because we are not interested in right and wrong here. We are not trying to comment on anything. People are just the way they are. They're understanding like that. They will explain like that. So don't right, no wrong. But what I want to share is my understanding. You don't have to believe. You go and give it a try. Well, this is what this nature understands. And this nature has its own past cultivation. And this life, when it comes, it receives also differently. And it has benefited not only my form and mind, my nature. It has benefited many beings. So it depends on your faith, your understanding. Nothing wrong. Because during the time of the Buddha, correct. I already explained. No. Chui. Don't get this all mixed up. Wait. You have to recall what I share. If you know how to release, you ask Han. I reminded her so many times. You know how to release it out to upachara samadhi, like what you say. Then do the daily mindfulness. You become beautiful. I said that many times. Understand? But you keep on telling me it's nice to experience the jhana. It's an individual choice. Understand? It's not one in a trillion. Chui, I also told you, I went into Apana Samadhi in the early day. I went into continuous absorption. I was trapped there, I told you, for many years. Until I met Pachayantra. Then I tried, I released it out. And I share all this with you. Why can't you listen to all this? Why want to argue that, oh, jhana, during the Buddha's time, the disciples also go to... No, undeniable. They went through jhana. And yet, they know how to come out and do the four foundation. So, nothing wrong. It's the individual's choice. Why do we want to, like, indulge in all this? We are not interested in that aspect of the argument, yes or no? You are confused. Aha, don't say we are all confused. Ah, you are confused, yes. Ah, yes. Ah. So what happened when you are confused? Wait. Very simple. When you are confused, what happened? I'm not asking you to explain, no. I just want to know, when you are confused, what happened to your mind state?
Then you have to go back.
Not to say go back. You have doubt. Understand?
It's okay to have doubt. There's nothing wrong when you're investigating. It's okay when you have doubt. Can you investigate and understand what...
Wait. What is doubt? It's one of the mental hindrances. Wait. You don't know. If you know when you have doubt, how can you investigate? It's a mental hindrance. It will hinder you. You don't seem to understand how I'm trying to help you understand. I ask a very simple question. What happened to you when you are in the state of confusion? You say the big I is confused. Then you answer, finally people correct you, because you say you have to go back. All this is not relevant. The relevant point is you have doubt. Okay? And that is a mental hindrance. A mental hindrance will hinder you from entering the meditative state to develop understanding. Finish. That's it. Whatever you say is from the thought. It's from your own views and opinion. And you can argue until the cow come home to reason and all those things. But the doubt is still there. Because you lack faith. When you lack faith, you cannot cultivate spiritual teaching.
I'm just saying that some people go
through... Why you want to talk about some people?
Chui.
Wait. Very simple. No, very simple. You listen. You can... Do whatever that your thought tell you and your view tell you. But the important thing is we are sharing the teaching. The teaching is, what did the Buddha say? Have faith in what? The Buddha and his teaching, not what the monks say. Understand? No? And his teaching. You have faith in the Buddha and his teaching through knowing who he is and how wonderful this is. Not what the monks say. Not what the monk define or comment on the commentary. Why are you going to all those things? Okay. That is... Okay. Next Tuesday. Next Tuesday. Okay. Next Tuesday. We continue. Then never mind. Then we let it rest. Because more important is what is it that you can benefit from all this sharing. It's not about right and wrong. Understand or not? It's not about how to defend our line of argument. I'm not interested. If I'm wrong, I tell you I'm wrong. If I don't understand, I tell you I don't understand. No doubt, that one I already explained. Okay, we have to end. Gee, thank you so much. Because it's getting very late, 10:47. You got anything, you can keep it for the next lesson. Then we will discuss it earlier so that we can have more time. Okay, some of you may have to go back. It's not really early anymore. So we will do the sharing of merits, transfer merits, then we end. Okay, let us recollect to mind all the wholesomeness that we have developed. Then we will share all these merits with all the beings. First, we will start with the devas. Akasata cha bhumata devanaga mahindika punyang tang anumoditwa chirang rakkhantu loka sasana ittavata chamehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya idang menyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang menyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang menyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo ibina punyang kamena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yawa nivana patiya sadhu sadhu sadhu. Keep in respect mindfully to Sakyamuni Buddha and all the worthy ones. Then we end. Thank you.